Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be sharing with you an interview with the English language chaplain in Lourdes, Father Martin Moran. And taking a look at spiritual exercises in the Vatican, that's with our popular Latin lover. But first of all, I'll be bringing you the latest news from the Vatican. Beginning with Pope Benedict XVI's address on Saturday to the participants of an international conference entitled Woman and Man, Humanity in its Entirety, sponsored by the Pontifical Council for the Laity. Lidia O'Kane reports for us.
Addressing the participants of the international conference sponsored by the Pontifical Council for the Laity, marking the 20th anniversary of Pope John Paul II's apostolic letter, Mulieris Dignitatem, Pope Benedict XVI spoke about how during the second half of the 20th century, because of profound social changes, the roles of women in various areas of social life has provoked much thought and reflection. The Holy Father stressed that such reflection must always be based on a sound theological anthropology that recognizes the respective differences, reciprocities and complementarities between women and men.
Nella Mulieris Dignitatem, Giovanni Paolo II ha voluto approfondire.
The Pope continued that in Mulieris Dignitatem, Pope John Paul II had wanted to deepen the contemporary discourse in the light of the truths about women and men revealed by God, which underlines their fundamental equality and dignity, and makes clear the complementary differences that constitute being human as male or female. Pope Benedict went on to say that facing cultural currents and politics that want to eliminate, or at least to obscure and to confuse gender differences, it is necessary to recall that the difference between the sexes are registered in human nature and are not just cultural constructions. Turning to his visit to Brazil last year and the opening of the 5th General Conference of the Bishops of Latin America and the Caribbean, he recalled how the Church has the responsibility to proclaim this message in and out of season, especially in cultures that do not recognise the equal dignity of women. He spoke of the challenges of confronting cultures which continue to discriminate against women, even reverting to so-called religious arguments to justify such behaviour, and he reiterated the Church's mission in contemporary societies to reject any form of violence against women and the exploitation of women in the media and in the sex industry. Towards the end of his speech, the Holy Father focused on marriage and the family, saying that the family was fundamental to the cell of society.
Penso qui alla famiglia, comunità di amore aperto alla vita.
The family is the place where the full complementarity of women and men, thanks to the gifts of maternity and of paternity, are demonstrated as irreplaceable in the care and growth of children. He added that, for its part, the state should develop adequate social policies that promote the stability and the unity of marriage and the dignity and the responsibility of spouses. The Pope also said that it was necessary that women were given back the possibility to collaborate in the construction of human society without being forced to negate the feminine genius. At the conclusion of his address, the Holy Father invoked the maternal intercession of Mary, who, he said, helps the women of our time to realise their vocation and their mission in the community and ecclesial and civil society. I'm Lidia O'Kane.
Well, my thanks there to Lidia O'Kane. But this certainly wasn't Pope Benedict XVI's only appointment on Saturday morning. He also met in this same hall, the Clementine Hall, with the participants of the Italian Federation for Spiritual Exercises, something I myself reported on, as you'll discover from my delivery. Spiritual exercises were in the air in the Vatican this weekend, as on the eve of his own annual weekly Lenten retreat, which begins Sunday, Pope Benedict spoke to the participants of the Italian Federation for Spiritual Exercises at the end of their National Assembly. To this group, led by their president, Cardinal Salvatore Di Giorgio, the Pope proffered words of thanks for having picked up on his magisterium as a theme of their assembly for a Christian spirituality which is authentically Eucharistic, indicates. The choice of this theme, the Holy Father stressed, echoes my express request to all pastors of the Church at the conclusion of my pastoral post-synodal exhortation, Sacramentum Caritatis, expressing your concern to embrace my teachings in a spirit of faith, as an object of study, but also as pastoral practice. Your federation, in fact, the Pope said, has as its aim to highlight how spirituality is the heart and soul of all pastoral life. An effort also in line with the teachings of my predecessors to the See of Peter, from Paul VI to Blessed John Paul II, teachings which I picked up on in my two encyclicals, Deus Caritas Est and Spes Salvi, where I insist on the key role of prayer, respectively in the face of growing secularism and on the path to hope. Spiritual exercises afford one a strong experience of God, Pope Benedict went on to say, characterized as they are by total silence, which enhances an encounter with God and a contemplation of Christ, both at a personal level and as a community. They are an occasion, Pope Benedict said finally, of renewed joy and love of the liturgy, a time of conversion and renewal. And he invited those present to renew their efforts to step up a qualified national network for spiritual exercises. But now do stay tuned for the second part of today's broadcast, which takes us to a popular site of pilgrimage at the foot of the Pyrenees, Lourdes, a place currently celebrating a special jubilee year to mark 150 years since Our Lady appeared to 14-year-old Bernadette Soubirous, who was a mere teenager at the time. To mark the feast day of Our Lady of Lourdes, which falls on the 11th of February, I thought I'd share with you a conversation with a person who lives and works at this French shrine in his quality as chaplain to the many English-speaking pilgrims who visit there. His name is Father Martin Moran from the Order of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. Father Martin Moran, you belong to the Order of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. Is there a specific reason for your serving as a chaplain in Lourdes?
Well, there's a specific reason, Veronica, in the sense that the Oblates were asked to take on the chaplaincies for the various language groups a number of years ago, and my own home province of the Anglo-Irish province was asked to supply the English language chaplain coordinator. You know, it fits in with our own charism and having Mary Immaculate as our patroness.
The apparition at Lourdes is connected to Mary Immaculate, no?
Yes, it is, because if you remember from the story of the apparitions, the lady, as Bernadette called her, the thing, the Aquero, didn't speak for a few of the apparitions, and then Bernadette was asked by the parish priest, ask her who she is, ask her to tell you who she is. And she said in the local dialect, I am the Immaculate Conception. And that was just a short time after that dogma had been pronounced by the Pope, that Our Lady was the Immaculate Conception. So it is very closely linked with the dogma, and it gave affirmation and confirmation to that, the apparitions here in Lourdes.
Lourdes is viewed as the shrine of water, of a miraculous spring, now with powerful healing energy. Do pilgrims go there to be physically healed from sickness or disability, or does the healing go beyond that?
Well, no, if I could just clarify something, Veronica. The water itself isn't looked on as miraculous. It was a miraculous event that the spring came forward whenever Our Lady asked Bernadette to dig at the earth, and she had to try about four times, and first of all the water ran quite muddy, and then it ran clear, and that spring has been running since the time of the apparitions. But the waters themselves are not curative or healing. It all depends on the faith of the individual. And yes, many people do come to Lourdes looking for physical healing. They do. But many more come just asking God to help them live their lives as best they can, and they leave Lourdes. And we talk about miracles that have been declared formally by the Church, but many, many people would say that every day there are miracles here at Lourdes, and I'm not saying that in any flippant way, but you know, people are touched deeply by God and are very aware of his presence in their lives.
Lourdes is currently celebrating its jubilee year, marking as it does a century and a half since Our Lady appeared to Bernadette there, no?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And there's a monthly calendar of events, I believe, outlined for the occasion. I noticed it's not just about Mary, the sick, the disabled, which is what you would expect, but it's also about sharing the life of the Church more in general. Why is that, do you think?
I think because Lourdes was never something that was meant to be inward-looking, and looking at the celebrations for the 150th anniversary of the apparitions, we were asked, you know, to think on what Lourdes is meant for today. What is Lourdes about? It's about sharing the gospel with the 21st century and the aspects of the gospel that are manifested in Lourdes. And Bishop Jacques Perrier, the Bishop of Tarbes-Lourdes, he put forward what he's calling 12 missions that will be highlighted at various times during the year. Missions of the church, but as I say, that Lourdes would feel it has a certain expertise in helping to further the gospel today. And that's the wonderful thing about Lourdes. It's nothing about it is contrary to the gospel.
What are these missions exactly?
For example, you know, today we have a large conference of the international gathering of the people who come here to help in Lourdes, knowing as the Hospitalier. They're meeting and they're taking up the first mission, and that is the church in mission with its volunteers in the service of others. And that's, you know, very appropriate for today, very appropriate for Lourdes. Another mission is the church in mission with Mary. We are called to follow the example of Mary and to give our yes to God as she gave her yes or to God through the angel. Another mission is the church in mission with young people, how we can help young people to discover Christ in their lives and to be a part of the church and to be the church not just of tomorrow, as often people say, but the church of today also. Another one that is very much associated with Lourdes is people who do come here looking for physical healing. And one of the missions that we have is the church in mission with people with disability. Another one that I've just looked at here is the church in mission for peace. Again, working for peace, you know, in our own world, between countries and within ourselves. So, as I say, that's just a few of them, but there is a website dedicated especially to the Jubilee year, and all the missions will be found on that website. And if I may give it to you, it's Lourdes2008.com, and that will give you all the information about the Jubilee year.
It may be an extraordinary year, but ordinary life goes on just the same in Lourdes. No, people go to immerse themselves in the waters and hope to be healed. Life goes on, doesn't it?
Life goes on. Yeah, it will be an extraordinary year in that we're celebrating a wonderful anniversary. But I liken it to, you know, a couple celebrating their wedding anniversary, and every year they celebrate that. But, you know, for their silver wedding or their golden wedding anniversary, that's a very special year. But at the core of that, you've got two people who love each other and who come to publicly celebrate the fact that they're celebrating that anniversary. And so it's the same for Lourdes. Like, many people will come next year, or this year if we're anticipating it by a day, will come to Lourdes to celebrate the Jubilee, but people who have been coming for a number of years, you know, to experience that which Lourdes has to offer. So yes, the ordinary will go on, but in the context of the Jubilee, in the context of the anniversary.
The shrine has always exercised a ministry of welcome, which is something you do as well, no?
Yes, it is,
can't
yeah.
always be easy to do that. I mean, when the suffering reach here, they've been travelling and are in pain perhaps, and those who are accompanying them are pretty tired. How do you deal with that?
Well, Lourdes could not survive without its volunteers. And I think the last figures I heard just a few weeks ago is that Lourdes has about 100,000 people who come here as volunteers to work at various times through the year. So certainly you're right in saying that people come here tired, especially if they've come over land on a long train journey or bus journey. But there will be a team of volunteers waiting to receive them, to welcome them, working in the two hospitals that the sanctuary has, the Accueil Notre Dame and the Accueil Marie Saint Frey. They're not your regular type of hospital, but they're set up like that for people who need a little bit more care, and they're there to welcome those people, to give them rest, and, you know, great care is taken of the sick. And then, of course, for the ordinary pilgrim, you know, there are lots and lots of hotels in the town.
You must have spoken to a lot of pilgrims in the time that you've been in Lourdes. They've obviously spoken to you about their reaction to the place. Is there something that stands out in a special way, do you think?
What stands out for me over the year is that people come and they get on, you know, say the helpers that come, they come and they get on with their work, and they're really giving of themselves. They're doing it voluntarily. They've taken their own annual leave to do that, so they're giving up their holidays to do this voluntary work. So those people stand out. And another incident during the year, a young husband came with his wife, and his wife had been here before, and he came. Now, I wouldn't say he was sceptical or cynical or anything, but just your ordinary Catholic, if you say. And he was extremely touched and moved by the whole experience of the grotto and the baths and the processions that go on here. And to see him, his face was visibly moved by all he witnessed here, you know, with the sick who come and the way they're looked after and cared for. So those sorts of images come to mind as you ask that question. And then the people who want to talk to a priest, who maybe haven't spoken to a priest at a deep level for whatever number of years that might have happened, and they find that very reassuring to be affirmed in their faith. And if they're able to offload any baggage they've been carrying for years, you know, a worry or something that's been on their minds, you know. So those things are the things that happen here on a daily basis.
But there, surely there must be people who come with great expectations and are disappointed, no?
I honestly haven't met that. I honestly haven't met them. People come, again, I can think of some people who came for a physical cure. I can think of a family, a mother and father brought their very severely handicapped daughter, and they came looking for a cure for her, and they spent the week here. And, you know, they did all the things that pilgrims do, the processions, going to the baths, taking part in the various liturgies, the masses that we have here. But at the end of the week, they said, we came for one thing, but we're leaving with another. And what they were leaving with was that they found a new strength to be able to be with their daughter in a new way. They found strength to look after their daughter. And that was quite a powerful thing for them and for us to be with them during that week. You know, so they didn't leave disappointed. They left here changed with a very renewed sense of their own faith, but also a new strength and a renewed strength in their lives. I genuinely can't say I've met people who leave disappointed. They leave tired but not disappointed.
And some of them leave shocked because in Lourdes, like in all shrines, it's not something specific to Lourdes. There's also the commercial element with the glitz of the tacky souvenirs under neon lights.
Yeah, yeah.
How does all this fit in with the faith that brings people here? Do the pilgrims actually enjoy that sort of thing?
I think for the first time pilgrim, they enjoy going to the shops, getting souvenirs, you know. Like what I say to people, you know, if you go to wherever, you know, an ordinary resort for your holiday, most people like to bring back a souvenir, you know, and they'll want something tangible, A, for themselves, and B, you know, a little memento for a friend or family they'd like to take back a souvenir. And then as time goes on, for people who have, you know, been here several times, that tends to not be as such a part of their pilgrimage. But it is still, you know, a part for most people that they want to bring back some Lourdes water or a little medal or something. But it's not actually in conflict with what goes on in the sanctuary, because once you step through the gates into the sanctuary area, the domain, you're in a different world. And there isn't a conflict there. You know, I mean, yeah, it's down to each person's individual taste. It really doesn't feature once people enter into the domain.
Our thanks there go to Father Martin Moran of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, the English language chaplain for the shrine at Lourdes. As I mentioned earlier on in the broadcast, on Sunday, 10th of February, Pope Benedict goes on his yearly Lenten retreat, led this year by a Jesuit. He's the former secretary of the Pontifical Biblical Commission, Cardinal Albert Vanois. During this week-long retreat, the 84-year-old French cardinal will focus on the theme, We Welcome Christ, Our High Priest, drawing from a passage in St. Paul's letter to the Hebrews. Top Vatican officials also attend the annual retreat with the Pope, who clears his schedule of all audiences for the week. So as Pope Benedict gets ready to clear his agenda for a week of reflection together with his papal household, I thought I'd quiz our popular Latin lover Carmelite Father Reginald Foster about spiritual exercises in the Vatican in the 20th century. Now, I want to speak about something serious, which is spiritual exercises in the Vatican. A practice which began in 1929, the year of the Lateran Pax.
I didn't know that.
With Pius XI, obviously, who admired St. Ignatius. Well, how does one say spiritual exercises?
Well, the exercitia spiritualia. That
comes from straight from Latin.
Yes, actually, yes. The first translations of St. Ignatius in Latin had that.
In my Catholic school, we used to say we would go on retreat.
Retreat is ad recessum spiritualem ire, recessum, to go in the background. That we can say, it's very beautiful. So the fact is, the way I live is in recessu perpetuo. I'm always on some sort of a retreat because, like, I'm all alone in my room. That's a recessu, to be off.
At any rate, the people who live in the Vatican, headed by the Pope, they go on spiritual exercises each year.
He goes on exercises.
And the papal household accompanies him. That's the correct terminology, the papal household. How does one say papal household?
Well, that's the Domus Pontificia.
The house of the...
The pontifical house.
In 1922, there was an apostolic constitution, Summorum Pontificum. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, so far.
In which St. Ignatius was proclaimed patron of spiritual exercises. You mentioned St. Ignatius tied to spiritual exercises, no?
Yes.
In fact, many of the preachers of these retreats in the papal household were Jesuits.
Yes, and that's the terminology came down from that. I'd like to know, you don't know any of the next words of Summorum Pontificum.
No.
But my students would go crazy over that kind of a beginning of a pontifical document of the Roman pontiffs. And of course, in Latin, you don't know what's happening.
Why?
Well, because you don't know how the sentence is going to end. The will of the Roman pontiffs, the custom of the Roman pontiffs, but the document begins with Summorum Pontificum. We love that kind of stuff.
In other words, you understand the meaning, you have to read the whole sentence.
Well, certainly. You ask my students, they'll club you on the head if you don't give them that answer.
How do you say club you on the head in Latin?
Te verberabunt in capite.
The retreats, the spiritual exercises in the Vatican, were frequent but not annual until... basically 1929, when there was an encyclical, Mens Nostra, which focused on spiritual exercises, right?
There's Mens Nostra. There's another beautiful. Go on.
Tell me, the Mens
Nostra.
Our
mind, our mentality, our thought. Our thought, Mens Nostra.
Just in two words.
One
of the things that Pius XI, who was Pope at the time, said in that encyclical is that the great disease of the modern era is the lack of reflection. This was 1929.
Poof, we can imagine today.
How would you translate that?
I don't know what he said.
The great disease of the modern era.
Ergo mecha maxima egritudo recensioris aetatis est is what?
Is the lack of reflection.
Of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Est manca, vel parva deliberatio, parva contemplatio. Oh, you can say it very nicely.
Since then, spiritual exercises have taken place in the Vatican almost annually, not always. During the Second Vatican Council, they were suspended, I think, for a while. But curiously, Pope John the 23rd held the exercises once, just right ahead of the Second Vatican Council, in the tower in the Vatican Gardens. Now, it made me think of, you know, John 23rd loved the gardens in the Vatican, and it was like he was leading all the papal household up the garden path.
Yeah, I don't think he was leading, but anyway, he was there, and maybe they came up there.
At any rate, what I'm getting at is, how do you say in Latin, leading someone up the garden path, which Pope John wasn't doing.
Per hortorum, semitam ducebat pontificiam domum. Leading house through the path of the gardens.
Whereas to lead someone up the garden path in British English is to deceive, to trick, to entice with false promises of fair prospect.
That's all right, but it's British.
Yeah. Which isn't what John the 23rd was doing, but how do you say that in Latin? Sorry.
Well, that would be decipere or fallere or fraudari or frustrari. There are many words to deceive.
One curious thing is that at the time of Pope Pius the 12th, a complaint was lodged, I believe, by Papa Pacelli himself that the preacher was delivering what he referred to in Italian as a nobile mattone, which... I'm quoting someone.
A noble brick? What does that mean?
He was saying that it was very heavy going. How would you translate the Italian, you know, nobile?
Well, if you want to say nobile mattone is later nobilis, which doesn't make any sense at all in Latin, but that's all right.
How would you give the gist of...
Bravi or sermo, it was rather heavy talk.
We were talking about John the 23rd Tower in the Vatican Gardens, but actually the spiritual exercises today take place in the Redemptoris Mater chapel. That's a chapel with a Latin name.
Mm-hmm. Redemptoris Mater.
Which means?
Mother of the Redeemer, which is the title of his encyclical on the Blessed Mother.
Pope John Paul's encyclical. Actually, before becoming Pope, when he was Archbishop of Krakow, he preached one of the retreats, one of the spiritual exercises. Becoming one of the first non-Italians to preach in the Vatican.
Go on.
Do you think the fact that many of the cardinals now come from different countries right across the world, do you think that changes the use of Latin within the church?
Certainly it has, in the sense that many of these people might not know Latin well enough. Many of these people were trained here in Rome, got their degrees here in Rome, and so Italian is more accessible and easier for them, and so it's
also because Latin is part of our Western cultural heritage, but some of these people don't come from.
I have Orientals who know Latin very, very well, but you have to be trained, you see. And some of these people, even the Orientals, would feel more at home with Italian because they lived here for a few years and got their degrees here. And oh, they say, oh, to think of Latin would be like a headache for them, which is very unfortunate. I have friends, when I meet them, we start speaking Latin immediately, you see. And the general of my order, and I hadn't seen him for, 25 years. And I saw him in summer, and the first thing, we just started speaking Latin. That was the end of it.
And... the people who take part in the spiritual exercises, they don't speak Latin, do they?
No.
It takes place in Italian.
Yes, well, many of them could or would or should. They should be able, but they...
Heartfelt thanks, as always, to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, who's currently working in the Vatican as the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.